Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I spent $40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. We are doing a hotline episode, and it has been a hot minute since we've done an episode like this. But can we even call it a hotline episode anymore, Chelsea? Because these episodes have evolved. We used to only answer questions from our hotline, but now they become kind of hybrid episodes because we solicit questions from Instagram as well.
Yeah, it's like a mailbag episode and a hotline episode. So I don't know what we call that. A hot bag? That sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's not great. Hopefully one of our listeners will come up with a better title for these kinds of episodes, because after all, it was a listener who came up with the phrase fuckette.
A listener and Margaret show. A combined effort.
Let's get into it. We have a lot of stuff to respond to. First up, I think the VMAs, which I wasn't aware had even happened until you texted me about it on Monday.
Yeah, we are aging out of the VMAs, although I still watch them for some reason.
And how were they?
They were whatever. There were some good performances, but for the first time in VMA history, I was completely unfamiliar with the song and the video that won Video of the Year.
What was it?
It was an Ariana Grande song called Brighter Days Ahead that I've never heard. The music video, I still have never seen. I tried to watch it, but it was like 20-something minutes. It was a short film, essentially. So I gave up.
It's funny that MTV can even still have the music video awards, seeing that they only play that ridiculous show, Ridiculousness, whatever that show is called. Like, they don't even, I mean, I'm going to sound 100 years old, but they don't even play music videos anymore. So it's kind of funny that they still have this award show.
Yet people watch music videos more than ever because of YouTube.
Which I guess is why Ariana Grande can release a short film as a music video. I did look at some of the fashion. Should we start there with Ariana, who was accompanied by La Roche as her date? They were both in Fendi.
Yeah, it was like a polka dot couples look kind of situation.
I enjoyed the twinning.
I think the dress was beautiful, but, and I appreciate the fact that it is subversive to wear something like this to the VMAs, because this dress is not flashy. It is not revealing. It is the opposite of what everyone else is wearing, which is punk in its own way. Although, I don't know. I think I need something different from her on the red carpet, because I feel like everything that she has done recently is some combination of Glinda and Audrey Hepburn.
Right.
And I just think, especially because she was there for reasons that had nothing to do with her film career, I feel like I actually would love to see her bring back the like hoodie as a dress with the like thigh high boots thing again.
That would be fun. I mean,
just for one night.
I guess I'll give it to her for sticking to an aesthetic, even when she is promoting various projects, just because I think that was my criticism of Lady Gaga last year, where I was like, hold on, we've got the Bruno Mars song, which is its own look. We've got the Abracadabra look. And then also she's doing her Vegas show, which is its own look. So at least she's being consistent. Although I am shocked that this was not part of the Wicked press tour, since they've been promoting this film, as we've noted, for 2 years straight.
Yeah. Sabrina Carpenter wore Valentino, which I liked a lot.
It was very hot.
It was like a sheer red lace gown with this lilac marabou stole. It was very like deliberately tacky in a Dolly Parton sort of way.
Which very much works with her look.
For sure. And also a bit of a Bob Mackie homage. She also wore a couple different Bob Mackie designs to the after parties and stuff. I think she changed like 4 times.
Which, very Cher of her, which one of the outfits was the Bob Mackie look that Cher wore while she was performing with Tina Turner for the Cher show in the 70s.
Yeah, I feel like that should have been her performance look. Like, I don't know why that was wasted on the after party. Because the performance look was like really whatever. I don't know if you saw her performance.
Oh, I did. I went back and looked at it all. But the other Bob Mackie look that she wore, am I getting this right? You texted me, did she buy it off the Real Real?
The Real Real is suggesting that she did because it was recently purchased from the Real Real in an extra small. And how many of those dresses can possibly exist?
We love to hear it. Unfortunately, this week's episode isn't sponsored by The Real Real, but as you know, we stand for it, whether they're sponsoring an episode or not.
You know who looked like Sabrina Carpenter this year? Doja Cat. I don't know if you saw her outfit.
I did. I was convinced without looking at the outfit credit that it was Moschino, but it's Balmain. I think the thing that makes it the most campy and very Carrie Bradshaw is that she had a Judith Lieber bedazzled bag.
Yeah, it was a weird look for her. Like, I get that, again, kind of like Sabrina, it was deliberately tacky in a 80s sort of way. But I don't know if it fully came together.
I think it's the hair. The look is really giving the nanny, like Fran Drescher, the nanny, which is why I think you're like, oh, this is very Sabrina Carpenter-esque. Because when I think of Sabrina Carpenter's persona, it's part Dolly Parton, but also Fran Fine from The Nanny.
Yeah. The hair was very Sabrina Carpenter.
Speaking of someone whose hair I loved, but I felt like the outfit did not serve as much, would be Ice Spice in the archival spring-summer 2003 Ralph Lauren look, the one that Charlotte York wore in season 6. I believe the episode they go to Raw.
Yes. I loved seeing that.
I love seeing it. I don't know if it worked on her.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, the corset is the interesting part of the look. I didn't care for the skirt necessarily. Well, it is Ralph Lauren. It looks like it's from the world of like Stella McCartney era Chloe, which was a look I really liked at the time. But it's fun to see, certainly. She's the last person I thought would end up in that particular piece.
I think that's it. There's something about someone wearing an archival piece that goes against the style persona that they normally have. But I don't think that this worked. And I think I'm just over people pulling archival looks in general. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in fashion now, and I wish people would wear more stuff off of the runway.
See, it's interesting, though, because the star quality at the VMAs has declined, not these people that we're talking about, but most of the attendees. We actually don't see a lot of like big designers at the VMAs anymore.
We do now see big stylists at the VMAs. And the fact that La Roche was on the red carpet with Ariana Grande as her date, which I found interesting. But yes, I think the most major look would be Lady Gaga in Off the Runway Marc Jacobs.
Yeah, she looked great. Although I don't know about the hair. To me, the hair was at odds with the outfit.
I think what we're trying to say is that there was no look top to bottom that was good or great, at least. Speaking of things that are not exactly great, did you see this Lady Gaga music video directed by Tim Burton?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the video was fine, but I just don't care about this song.
No, it's for the Wednesday soundtrack, which, what is this Wednesday show? Is she at a boarding school?
Yeah, I saw the first episode of it.
So it's,
but then didn't continue. Yeah, she's at a boarding school. You know, it's like some Harry Potter type shit.
All right, count me out.
It's like not bad. To be fair, I've only seen one episode. I could dive in further, but I haven't for some reason.
So this Lady Gaga music video, for those who have not seen it, it is very clear they had one location and they had Lady Gaga for one day, but they set dressed the hell out of it with all of these spooky dolls, which is cool, except when it becomes very clear that they are AI animated in this video.
Well, how can we tell the difference between AI and general CGI?
Just bad CGI?
I will say, I think Tim Burton is someone whose work hasn't really benefited from technology since like Mars Attacks or something. By the time he did Willy Wonka, shit had gone off the rails.
Oh, don't even get me started on Alice in Wonderland.
That was obviously the low point.
Yeah, don't love the video, but love Tim Burton directing music videos.
For sure. Also, someone asked if I went to the Mayhem Ball. Unfortunately, I did not go to the Mayhem Ball, which I am sad about. But I'm just sick of being a pay pig for all of these divas. You know, like, how many times can I do it?
That's true. I mean, last year almost broke you.
I need a break. All right, next question. Thoughts on the semi-viral Phoebe Philo video?
I think it's funny to call it a semi-viral video. I texted you and I was like, the only thing I can think of is it this video I saw where it seems like Phoebe Philo is ignoring Stella McCartney at this LVMH luncheon?
Yeah, I don't think it was even a luncheon. I think it was like they were at the jury table for the LVMH prize. And it's this video of Phoebe Philo walking into the room with this incredible swagger. She's like, the attitude is so good. She's wearing a leather jacket. She looks so fucking cool. And yes, she walks straight past Stella McCartney. Who knows? They could have very easily greeted each other before this video was recorded.
What could have happened even a second prior is Phoebe Philo and Stella McCartney saying hi or bye to each other. But it's as Phoebe Philo is passing Stella McCartney. To be fair, in this video, Phoebe Philo doesn't say hello to Jonathan Anderson or Pharrell in this video either. However, she is seen embracing, I believe it's Delphine Arnault and Nicolas Ghesquiere very tightly.
She seemed delighted to see Nicolas Ghesquiere. I think this video really just captures the essence of her coolness. Like, when I first saw it, I watched it like 10 times in a row. Like, I couldn't stop.
She has a very cool energy. I feel like for those that don't know the backstory, we should probably get into the fact that when Stella McCartney went to Chloe, even going further than that, Phoebe Philo and Stella McCartney knew each other from design school at Central St. Martin's. When Stella McCartney was appointed the head designer of Chloe, she brought Phoebe Philo with her. When Stella McCartney left to start her own label, Phoebe Philo took over. From what I know, there is no beef between the two, or at least documented beef. It is certainly possible.
It's possible. I'm going to start writing fanfic about it immediately, regardless of what the truth actually is.
We spend so much time caring for the skin on our face, but what about our neck? No one likes to talk about it, but our neck is one of the first places to show visible signs of aging. And as someone who is a middle-aged millennial and chronically online, I have recently noticed the dreaded tech neck creases on my very own neck. That's where Go Pure Beauty's Tighten and Lift Neck Cream comes in. Designed to be the hero of your fall skincare routine, this powerful formula is packed with clinically proven ingredients that visibly firm, smooth, and rejuvenate the skin on your neck and chest in as little as 4 to 8 weeks. They sent me a jar of the Go Pure Beauty's Tighten and Lift Neck Cream, and I've been using it religiously, and I feel like my neck is looking refreshed and, dare I say, younger. Go Pure isn't just about transforming the skin on your neck. They have a full line of science-backed skin and body care to tighten, lift, and smooth skin from head to toe. From powerful targeted body creams to deeply hydrating retinol moisturizers. Let's not sleep on these hydrating retinol moisturizers. I love a product that's working double time. Every product is packed with clean, effective ingredients that deliver real results without the harsh chemicals or hefty price. With over 1 million jars sold, this beauty secret is no longer a secret. For a limited time, our listeners get 25% off Go Pure with code OUTFIT25 at checkout. Just head to gopure.com, use code OUTFIT25, and you're all set. And after you buy, do us a favor. When they ask where you heard about Go Pure, tell them that it was from our show.
All right, we got a call and the audio quality was fucked up, but it was a great question, which is, what are our favorite homes owned by fashion people?
I feel like a lot of people discuss Halston's apartment. It is well documented, but not enough people discuss Elsa Peretti's all cream apartment from the 70s.
Yeah. It's truly beautiful.
Well, also, how are we categorizing this? Like, aesthetics we appreciate or homes we would want to live in?
I think it's both. I mean, the Halston, it's so iconic. And the best photos of the Halston apartment were taken by the New York Times Magazine. There is an excellent, excellent book called Living Well, which was a bunch of interiors from the New York Times Magazine from the 70s and 80s. The Halston apartment is in it, and also Ralph and Ricky Lauren's 70s apartment is in it. Thierry Mugler has like the most insane apartment that is in that book. So that I would recommend. Like, those are the best. But I agree with you about Elsa Peretti, for sure.
Another apartment, I respect the aesthetic. I don't know if I would want to live there, is Betsy Johnson's all pink or black, pink and black apartment from, is it the 70s or the 80s?
I think that was 80s. It was pink walls, hardwood floors, black furniture. And then she had a chartreuse green door. This has been on the mood board for our studio for some time, although at a certain point we realized that we just couldn't be in a pink vortex all the time. That apartment looms large for me as well, but also like whatever apartment she had in the 90s, even though it's not personally a design style that like really, really speaks to me now, there's something so special about Betsy Johnson's apartment from that era. Also Anna Sui's apartment from the 90s was so nuts. That's a level of maximalism that is just beyond what I could live in, but I appreciate it. I feel the same way about Diana Vreeland's apartment.
Right, right. I was also going to say, it's funny, I feel like you're leaning towards maximalist apartments and I'm leaning towards minimalist apartments. I also think about, and I'm sure we'll hyperlink to all of these in the show notes, but what lives rent-free in my head is Donna Karan's Manhattan penthouse that was in Vogue in the mid-2000s. Very minimalist, very zen.
Oh yeah, this is beautiful.
I have a lot of clutter, which I'm desperately, I cannot wait to have the time to go through it. But I think that's why I am longing for all of these minimalist apartments.
Yeah. Another apartment that was photographed for Vogue that I'm still thinking about, and I couldn't actually find it online, but in the early 2000s, they photographed the apartment of the founders of Agent Provocateur. Now, there's only one photo from the shoot that I can currently find on the internet, but that is like truly the best, sexiest bedroom I've ever seen in my life. I think I actually have to just buy this issue on eBay or something so that I can see this bedroom again.
Interesting.
Next question.
It's actually a call.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Chelsea. First time caller. I just watched Prêt-à-Porter by Robert Altman on the Criterion Channel because they have his showcase kind of spotlight collection. Have you covered this on the podcast? Please do. I want to know all the things about it. Not even going to ask if you've seen it because I'm sure you have. Love you. Bye.
I have not seen this movie in a minute.
Okay, sorry. I thought you were going to say ever.
I have, of course, seen this film. It's been maybe a good 10 years since I watched it. Of course, the first of every month, I do two things, Chelsea. I say rabbit, rabbit, and I go to the Criterion Channel to see what is dropping for that month. And I was delighted to see the Robert Altman collection.
Yes, do not sleep on this opportunity to see Prêt-à-Porter. I love this movie, but when I first saw it, I was too young to really appreciate the level of satire about the fashion industry specifically. But I did rewatch it a couple years ago. Lauren and I have actually tried to screen this film in LA on several occasions. It has not worked out for us yet, but I hope that that happens one day. The cast of this movie is so incredible, but I think the best part of it is Linda Hunt and Tracy Ullman playing these rival fashion editors.
There's so much good to this film.
There's a dog fashion show.
I love Kim Basinger as a kind of Tim Blank stand-in for the fashion show fad.
Yeah, she was maybe a bit more cable access than that. She was great.
This is also an era of Robert Altman's career where he's coming off of The Player, which a lot of actors in The Player, like Tim Robbins and Julia Roberts, who has a cameo role in The Player, Richard E. Grant, my favorite, also appear in this film. And it seemed to be that he was in this period where he was very into poking fun and making satirical movies about creative industry. So The Player was about Hollywood, Prêt-à-Porter, obviously about the fashion industry.
But it wasn't really that well received in the way that The Player was. Like, this was a flop by pretty much everyone's standards at the time. I think it's a great movie. Also, a lot of it was filmed on location at Paris Fashion Week in 1994. So you actually get to see a lot of incredible collections. You see real models. Helena Christensen, of course, is on the poster for Prêt-à-Porter.
And to answer your question, TBD on if we would ever do a VIP episode on it, but everyone should watch the film.
I really liked doing that one VIP episode about fictional fashion designers. maybe we do one about photographers or models or something. And we can get into that in a deeper way.
Sounds good.
All right, next call.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Chelsea. I have a super niche question for you, but what the heck happened to Luella Bartley? And where is she? And why isn't she designing clothes anymore? And I just need some help to figure out what happened. And I feel like you two would know. Thank you. Bye.
You would be correct. Because obviously we're Luella stans. Of course.
Of course. And I love the idea of us doing like a Every Outfit Investigates, but where obscure people from the fashion industry went. And this answer is multi-pronged.
Well, I wouldn't say she's obscure.
Okay.
Let's not drag our girl like that.
Where do you want to begin with this? Because in my research, there's sort of several answers, like why she is not a fashion designer anymore.
The brand closed in 2009, which sucked. Then in 2013, her and Katie Hillier briefly took over Marc by Marc Jacobs. And briefly, Marc by Marc Jacobs was rebranded as MBMJ. I remember they switched it to that on Vogue Runway for a while. That was good. It was actually kind of streetwear adjacent. And I feel like it was pretty well respected, but it closed abruptly after a couple of years. And they just stopped doing Marc by Marc altogether.
That was a sad day. Yeah, there is a Guardian article with her from 2023 where, well, there's a couple articles. There's one that I found from Fashionista that was around the time that they took over designing for Marc by Marc, where she said that she had shut down her eponymous label just because she had had a baby. She wanted to spend time with her family. And then in this Guardian article from 2023, we learned she's subsequently become a painter, and sadly, her son passed away from leukemia. So it seems that her design career came to a close as she was spending more time with her son as he was going through his leukemia treatment. And after he passed, she just moved on to painting, which the paintings look beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. Imagine if Egon Schiele paintings involved Adidas track pants. Although I do think we also need to acknowledge that she started another brand called Hillier Bartley after Marc by Marc closed. And that was good. It was definitely more grown up than Luella. And then after that, she worked at Calvin Klein during the Raf Simons era. So she has been designing clothes. She just hasn't had her own label or been as forward facing.
And I love the idea of someone evolving out of one creative field into another one later in life.
Well, lots of people become fine artists. You know, Margiela, didn't Helmut Lang do that also? Am I making that up? I don't know. This is such a specific question. Who is the Louis Vuitton Comme des Garçons tote bag with holes in it actually for?
Oh, I have an answer for this.
Who?
It's for you, Chelsea.
Yeah, it's for me.
To hold a quart, but very specifically, to hold a quart of the Erewhon white bean and kale salad.
I could hold several quarts of that in this Louis Vuitton tote.
I assume that this person is asking this question because, as Chelsea described, this bag has many holes in it. So I guess this person is wondering who would carry this bag because all the things you would keep in your purse would fall out. But you can keep a wallet and a phone in there at the bottom of the bag. It won't fall out of those holes. The holes are like towards the top.
Well, also, we need to acknowledge that there is a dust bag inside the bag where you can actually put all of your shit. And that's removable. So you can carry it just with like no dust bag, full holes out. God knows what will happen. Or you can like have things be a bit more secure with the dust bag. Who is this for? Smart people. Because like I feel like this bag, it probably came out a decade ago at this point, but they're so much more valuable now than they were at the time. They're just going to get more valuable. So if anyone has one of these, hang on to them. And I hope that they expand upon this collaboration in the future. I could do with like a 50-piece collection.
More holes?
Yeah, more holes. Also, very influential when you consider that Virgil Abloh later made those off-white bags that were also full of holes. A Swiss cheese vibe, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there are more impractical bags. Like, to me, a very teeny tiny bag is way more impractical than this holy tote.
For sure.
Like, I think those mini Kelly bags are probably the stupidest, most impractical bags I've ever seen.
Well, if you can't fit your phone inside it, that's when it becomes insane.
I agree with you.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Next question. What do you wish designers would resurrect?
We've definitely talked in the past about our desire for lining to return.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I also wish we could bring slips back. Like, it is very hard to find a good standard slip, or God forbid, a slip skirt from a nice brand these days.
You are so right.
Like, you can't get that at Skims.
No, I guess it's too old fashioned and too old lady. But like, that's something I remember from when I was growing up that my mom would wear, just like an innumerable amount of slip skirts underneath a skirt. But yet now I feel like my de facto thing is I have no choice but to wear like a shapewear nude short if I don't want. Because of course, as we've noted, no dresses have lining.
But you don't want people to see a short through. Like, that's, you can't let that happen either, you know?
I absolutely agree with you. I was going to say diffusion lines.
Okay. We got to get Mark by Mark back.
I think this is something I'm trying to recapture from my adolescence, where I fell in love with fashion, where the diffusion lines were still out of reach for me financially. But like, now I'm in a place where I could buy diffusion line price points, but no one has a diffusion line anymore.
So what, you want like this Schiaparelli diffusion line?
I would love it.
Lil Elsa.
But the Schiaparelli diffusion line would still be like $2,000 for a dress, down from $17,000.
Yeah, I'm with you. A good diffusion brand. I mean, Marc Jacobs does have Heaven. That is a very good example of a good diffusion line that's done something different, that's added something else to the conversation.
I'm talking C by Chloe. I'm talking...
They never really figured that out, though. I don't think they ever figured that out.
I'm just saying I would like diffusion lines at a more approachable price point.
You know what was good is like the Gautier diffusion lines, like Gautier jeans. That kind of shit was great. We need more of that. Headwear fashion for a chemo patient, please. Trying to rock the bald but also want options. First of all, I'm so fucking sorry. This is so awful. And if you DM me, I will send you an every outfit hat. So you will have one more option. I would take this opportunity to get very into headscarves. I would take this opportunity to rewatch season 6 of Sex and the City for some Samantha inspo. I would maybe do that Jackie O thing where you wear the headscarf with the big sunglasses and a trench coat.
Yeah, I would steer away from the more cultural appropriating wigs that Samantha dips into during that season. Yeah, I think anything that ties under the chin. There are some cute bucket hat options. There is a Damson Matter has a reversible headscarf for $55. It's denim and then also khaki. I think that is very cute. I think what we're suggesting is stuff that has a flair and drama to it.
Yeah, but you can also do something that's casual, like consider a bandana.
I was going to say, if you search for knit bandanas, there's some great options.
Or just like, look at pictures of Isaac Mizrahi from the 90s and try and achieve what he's doing there.
In researching this question, I've also realized that there's no consensus on headwear language, because when I searched headscarf, something came up called like a headscarf beanie, which is kind of...
That sounds like something that should be illegal.
But something that's sort of soft, not exactly a balaclava, but potentially as you get into fall and winter, something you can put over your head that has, you know, a neck detail to it. I think the options are endless, actually.
Oh, yeah. Or consider, a full balaclava, like a spring breakers situation. That could be great. All right. We have some questions pertaining to show business. First and foremost, thoughts on the Wuthering Heights trailer.
This, I would say, is the number one thing we got asked when we were asking for questions. I think this is a safe space for Chelsea and I to admit we've never read the book.
not only have I not read the book, I've never seen any of the films. I haven't even so much as seen a Wishbone episode about Wuthering Heights.
But I know that this book is very important to a lot of people. So I asked my cousin, who is an English teacher, she is a Bronte sister fanatic, to explain to us, A, what the book is about, and two, what the trailer got wrong. So this is my cousin Elizabeth. Take it away.
Hi, Chelsea and Lauren. This is Elizabeth. And I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about the new Wuthering Heights trailer. I have a lot to say about the Wuthering Heights trailer. So as an English teacher and a Bronte fan, I don't really even think you can call it Wuthering Heights. In the novel, there is no bodice ripping. There's no finger licking. There are no horse whips. It's not sexual at all. So the novel is about two families, the Lintons and the Earnshaws, and Margot Robbie plays Kathy Earnshaw. When she's very young, her father adopts an orphan boy and takes him into the family and calls him Heathcliff. This is Jacob Elordi's character. One thing that the trailer gets wrong is something that a lot of people get wrong about Wuthering Heights. It's not a love story. Kathy and Heathcliff have a connection. Kathy says it's something like twin souls. There's actually no scenes in the novel where they are in any sort of sexual contact. So overall, I think it does have the shock value that the novel has, but it reaches it in a completely different way than the novel does. The novel is focused on abuse and power and cruelty and depravity, but that's not sexual.
Thank you, Elizabeth. She told me that she spent her free period doing this for us instead of, you know, grading papers for the next generation.
See, I have no problem with someone that wants to make a horny version of like a literary classic. We should do this with more movies, like a really slutty Of Mice and Men.
Dare I say the Gary Sinise John Malkovich one was a slutty version.
But they kind of did this with the 90s adaptation of Great Expectations, right? Like that was horny. Didn't we see Gwyneth Paltrow masturbate at some point?
I watched that film semi-recently. That I don't remember. I know that there's, when they reconnect Gwyneth Paltrow and Ethan Hawke over a water fountain, there's a lot of tongues clashing.
I like the fact that it's horny, but it seems like the other controversy is the whitewashing of the Heathcliff character, which I, of course, only know from the Kate Bush song.
That's what I was going to say. Well, also, okay, is it Wuthering or Wuthering Heights?
Wuthering.
Wuthering Heights. If you notice in the trailer, Wuthering Heights is in quotes. It's in quotes when you see the title card, and then when I looked at the trailer title itself on YouTube, it's Wuthering Heights in quotes. I read a take online that was like, I bet you this is Margot Robbie reading the book and her fantasies about what's going on in the book. But I do think it's very telling for people who are very mad that this does not seem to be faithful to the original material. To be fair, they put quotes around Wuthering Heights.
Okay, but did you read at all about this like whitewashing scandal with this?
Yeah, it's not great.
Well, it's, again, having never read the book, Heathcliff described as a dark-skinned person. There have been many adaptations of Wuthering Heights, but only in a more recent version, which was directed by Andrea Arnold, who's fantastic. We should definitely watch this version and also probably the William Wyler one. But in that version, they actually made him black for the first time.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a 2009 Masterpiece Theater version of Wuthering Heights where Tom Hardy, a white man, plays Heathcliff.
It's always been white until this Andrea Arnold one, from my understanding, which was seen as a more modern take on the source material.
Okay, separating the film from its literary context, I guess, which seems to be what Emerald Fennell is doing with the piece. It looks great. It looks very stylish.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I loved Saltburn. I didn't really care about Promising Young Woman that much, but excited to see what she does with it.
I think it's smart. It's coming out next Valentine's Day. We'll be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, next question. Do you think Isabelle Huppert would do the White Lotus, seeing as the next season is set in France? She did a guest starring role on a shitty episode of Law & Order SVU. I'm pretty sure she's not above being on the White Lotus.
I was wondering if she would maybe play herself, though.
See, I think that she would be great as a long-suffering staff member of the hotel. Like, she could have played the lesbian manager from the Italy season, or a character like that.
Yeah, other than kind of random spots here and there, Isabelle Huppert is kind of a capital F film actress. Like, she played herself in a show called Call My Agent. And then she, as you said, she was in a Law & Order episode, but I don't know.
Well, to me, White Lotus is becoming more perverted as each season goes on. Like, the Thailand season was quite sexually transgressive. So I feel like this is a perfect time to bring her in, because that's her whole thing.
Sure. This is coming from a place where, to me, Isabelle Huppert is A-list. But I think the exciting thing about each season of The White Lotus is the casting is so good and introduces us to new actors we've never seen before. Like a Will Sharpe, like a Amy Lou Wood. Also, I think, to your point, as The White Lotus becomes more perverted, it's also becoming more mainstream, where higher and higher level actors, I think, want to be a part of it.
For sure. And there's no way they would set a season in France without casting some French actress of a certain age. One of them. Could be Isabella Gianni, could be Catherine Deneuve, could be a number of people. But I do believe that we will get one character like that. It would be too much of a missed opportunity not to.
Well, I will be refreshing Deadline to see who it ends up being. Okay, next question. Can we all watch Witches of Eastwick this season?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
And we should. And Practical Magic has really stolen its thunder over the years. Because, like, the Witches of Eastwick is basically like Practical Magic, but the slutty version that's about polyamory.
Yeah.
Also, we should rewatch this movie and get really inspired by the hair. I have never seen bigger, curlier, more fabulous hair in my life than in this movie.
I was going to say, I mean, we're going to need piece after piece after bump it, after back teasing, to have hair that reaches that level.
Yeah, I don't know if we're capable of having that kind of volume and lift, but I like to think that anything is possible. Okay, related question, favorite autumnal movies?
The first film that popped in my head, maybe it popped into your head, You've Got Mail?
Yeah, of course.
It's interesting, when I was thinking about this, I specifically think of movies set in the East Coast. I need a movie where the leaves are changing. I want that beautiful orangey leaves falling from trees. I want a scarf.
Well, I think that's half the appeal of Hocus Pocus. Like, I feel like that's a big part of the reason why that film endures. It's because the autumn that is presented in that movie is just too fabulous. It's magical.
In thinking about these movies, I think for a movie to be an autumn film, you need to see Halloween in it. And I thought of a good autumn film, but a Los Angeles autumn, is Beginners. We've got people in jackets, and you see a Halloween party. That's all I need.
I love Turner Classic Movies. They've recently introduced the concept of a Douglas Sirk autumn, which I support wholeheartedly. I feel like fall looks the best in a Technicolor film. So I'm going with Written on the Wind, All That Heaven Allows, and then, of course, its autumnal successor, Far From Heaven. Perfect fall movies.
Very good. And then I would say, as an offshoot of You've Got Mail, if you like a New York-based 90s romantic film, Bed of Roses, which is very difficult to find. It is a Mary Stuart Masterson, Christian Slater film from the mid-90s, where he is a florist with a tragic past. And
are you sure this isn't that Blake Lively movie?
No. Before that Blake Lively film, there was Bed of Roses, and you got Pamela Adlon as the best friend character.
See, I don't think I ever actually saw that movie, but the movie poster or the VHS cover looms so large in my head.
And would Royal Tenenbaums qualify as an autumn film?
I think so. Yeah.
A lot of the movies I was thinking of, kind of, they go into winter. And I'm thinking about strictly films that take place clearly between the months of October and November.
I think as long as the film has a significant portion set in autumn, it should qualify. But yes, there's nothing like the coziness and the escapism of a great autumn movie.
Especially for us who now live in Los Angeles, which is seasonless.
Yeah.
Who is the best, parentheses, most worthwhile Nepo baby and the worst?
Best Nepo baby, Frankie Grande. Just kidding. No, it's Jane Fonda or Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, there's a few ways to answer this question. I tried to not go with the obvious Nepo baby pick, so I gave myself parameters, and the parameters were, to your Liza Minnelli, Jane Fonda point, someone who's multi-generational, a Nepo baby who has several generations before them of parents who are famous. But I also tried to think of Nepo babies who are in a different creative field than their famous parent. So I think of Bella Freud, I think of Stella McCartney, I think of someone like an Osgood Perkins. So you got his, is it great-grandmother or grandmother is Elsa Schiaparelli. His father is Anthony Perkins. He's a director. I also think of someone like Colin Hanks.
Sofia Coppola, the classic.
So funny you should say Sofia Coppola. I felt that that was going to be too obvious. So I'm going to add Romy Mars to the list because I think of this new generation of Nepo babies. She knows what to do with her nepotism, Chelsea, because her most recent TikTok was forcing Jacob Elordi to do a TikTok dance with her. And that's what I want from my Nepo babies.
For sure. Least worthwhile Nepo babies? I was going to say Chet Hanks. And then I realized that that's not true because at least he did do something. You know what I mean? That was memorable. The most worthless Nepo babies, we wouldn't even know about them.
Chet has really won me over.
Actually, maybe he is the best. Maybe we have this all wrong.
I mean, there's something so camp about him. And I think over the years, what felt like a phase or a persona is very distinctly him. Just because he isn't really Tom Hanks's son, he is Rita Wilson's son. And that's what's become clear over the last few years. I would say that Brooklyn Beckham is probably the worst.
That's true. But a lot of people are fascinated with Brooklyn Beckham and that whole situation. Whereas I, whenever I hear the words, I run in the other direction. I swipe as fast as possible away from whatever it is.
There's also another genre of Nepo baby that I actually do think is the worst, which is any son of a notable person who is obsessed with their famous father. So I put Rob Lowe's son in this category. He has a son named John Owen Lowe, who starred with his father in a short-lived Netflix series. I would also, controversially, I'll put Hunter Biden and Charlie Sheen in this category. I don't know if you've ever seen an interview with Hunter Biden or Charlie Sheen. All they can talk about is their daddies. Nepo babies with public daddy issues? Ugh, the worst.
You know who's good, though, is Francesca Scorsese.
Yes.
She seems like obsessed with her dad, but in the most wholesome, cool way.
That goes in the Romy Mars category.
Yeah, she's killing it. I love her. Okay, moving on to our LGBTQIA plus questions.
Let's start off with a call, actually.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. I had a sex dream about Chelsea. I had a sex dream about Chelsea last night. I've never had sex with a woman before. But I would just like to say it was a really wonderful experience in the dream. I'm a college professor. I listen to you guys religiously. I think you're so cool. I'm mostly happy that I had the experience in the dream. I just don't know what comes next. And I don't mean that in terms of like, Chelsea, like you won't receive any calls from me or anything like that. Don't worry. But like, do I sleep with a woman now? I did enjoy it in the dream. Don't dreams mean something? I'm freaking out a little bit, but it was mostly really wonderful. I love your podcast. Every week, I love it. All right, bye.
I just want to make it clear for anyone who has not called our hotline previously, we do say in the outgoing message, if you do not want us to play the message, please let us know. So since this caller did not say it, we saw that as tacit approval to play this call. Chelsea, you are getting busy in people's subconscious.
Look, I'm flattered, but she also said, I'm mostly happy I had this dream. What was that about?
I think it more has to do with the fact that she's never had sex with a woman. And what does this dream mean exactly?
Okay. Because I'm glad that it seems like she had a positive experience, which I appreciate. I really hope that this was like the sex scene from The Hunger with like opera music playing and like billowing chiffon like canopy bed situation. But I wonder how accurate your sex dream actually was.
To what sex with you would be like?
I guess so. Or like, what did my tits look like in her sex dream? You know?
I mean, there's only one way to find out. I think you need to send this caller a photo of your tits and be like, does this match up?
I hope she gave me like triple D's.
Not to take anything away from you, but I do wonder if you starred in a sex dream for this caller because she was perhaps, maybe she fell asleep to our podcast.
Yeah, but why didn't she have a lesbian sex dream about you? Has anyone had a sex dream about Lauren? Please call in. All right, next call.
Hi, Gen Z Gay here. And when I was listening to you guys talk about Melissa Etheridge and the Indigo Girls, I thought mistakenly I had never heard of them. But then I realized that my aunt has been indoctrinating my cousins with the Indigo Girls for years, and that she's seen Melissa Etheridge and the Indigo Girls 5 times in concert with my uncle. And I just want like a historical context. What does it mean? Like, am I reading too much into it? Love to know. Thank you.
I had to play this call several times because I was like, well, what's the big deal? Like, it didn't even clock that her aunt is married to a man until like the 4th time I played this call.
Okay, you really do have like baby brain or whatever. Is that what it's called?
I don't even know.
This could really go either way. You should consider that maybe her playing the Indigo Girls around you might have made you gay yourself. So something to think about. But look, it was not uncommon for boomers to essentially marry their best friend. So yeah, maybe your aunt is a lesbian, but like she just kind of fucks with your uncle or whatever. But also some people are culturally lesbian. My dad was like that. He spent a large portion of the 90s wearing an Indigo Girls baseball hat that had a sunflower embroidered on it. So I think some people are just fans of folk music or rock music in the case of Melissa Etheridge. I don't think you have to be a lesbian.
So your aunt may not be a lesbian, but your uncle definitely is a cultural lesbian, is what Chelsea's trying to say.
Okay, next question. Where can I meet a tall, attractive, age-appropriate, late 30s, early 40s mask lesbian? What a question. I'm just going to say...
Wait, hold on, Chelsea. I think I should take this one.
I'm just going to say, finding all of these things is pretty impossible. Like, you could find someone with all of these qualities, but they will be short. You lost me with tall a little bit.
Well, see, the tall thing is big in the heteronormative dating standards, as we saw in Materialist, but I didn't know that this also plagued homos as well.
Yeah. Look, it's always rough out there, but you basically have 2 options. You have to flirt with people on Instagram, or you have to like actually go to lesbian parties in a regular capacity.
Not bars, because there's only 4 lesbian bars left.
Well, go to the like 15 remaining lesbian bars in the United States, of course, if you live in a town that has one. We don't, unfortunately. I will say, if you live in New York, someone sent me a flyer. There are going to be Meow Mix reunion parties.
Oh, wow.
In New York next month. This was an iconic lesbian bar in the Lower East Side that I used to frequent back in the day. You could possibly find someone in their 40s there, but it also might be more like 50s, 60s vibes, you know?
So either go down in height or go up in age.
Exactly.
Have you seen the Jesse Smollett Netflix documentary?
Yes. Did you?
Of course. I mean, did I finish it a few hours ago? Yes, but I did watch it.
It didn't prove his innocence, but it does provide us with enough reasonable doubt about the case.
Sure. I mean, the documentary is constructed in a way where you see the story the way that we all metabolized it, which is the crime, the conviction, and all of this stuff. And then in like the last 12 minutes, they're like, well, there's all of this other evidence. Oh, this doorman from or security guard from a hotel saw a white guy pass by. Oh, and there's 10 seconds missing from the security footage, and oh, someone that lived in Jesse Smollett's building saw a guy and she thinks she saw like some rope in his back pocket. So that completely corroborates Jesse Smollett's story, and it's like, not really. I mean, he says from the beginning, right, they don't take his story that you hear from the beginning, because he is profiled in this documentary. They don't juxtapose that with these new details at the end, because he very clearly says he was attacked by two people. These witnesses who did not get to tell their story during his court case only ever saw one singular person.
But still, there wasn't enough evidence to convict him of this. There's no DNA that ties anyone to this crime.
That's true. All you had were the brothers who testified against him.
Also, Chicago Police Department does seem pretty corrupt. The missing footage from the security camera was deeply sus, for sure.
That is fair enough. But also, two things can be true. The Chicago Police Department can be very corrupt, and Jesse Smollett could have crafted a hate crime hoax to bring more attention to himself.
True. I forgot about the Subway sandwich detail.
The amount of discussion about whether a man in sub-zero temperature after he is attacked would pick up his Subway sandwich or would not, I was not expecting.
I believe that most people would not, but hey, you know, sometimes Subway just is that good.
Yeah, I think a detail, again, towards the end of the documentary when they are giving light to Jesse Smollett's version of the story, what isn't focused on is the fact that the two brothers, so the brothers who attacked him got an immunity deal. Well, that's the other thing. Did those guys not beat him up? That was, according to Jesse Smollett, that was a lie.
And also, when you see the security footage where they tracked them from the crime scene, basically, it's like, that was obviously not one of those brothers, if we are to believe that those were the two people that attacked him.
For sure. But also, didn't they track the Uber that they got or the taxi cab within a block of where those two brothers lived? And that was the only car in the vicinity that was driving around?
For sure.
Again, it's a little clunky. It's very, the way that Netflix documentaries are crafted these days, it's very in line with that. I do believe those two brothers, when they're explaining that Jesse Smollett had received a threatening letter, which looks to be a letter that Jim Carrey's The Riddler put together, because it's like,
oh, I was going to say the letter from the bodyguard, but who knows? I doubt that was the actual letter. That was probably a reenactment because it was so stylized. It was like from out of Serial Mom or something.
Right. It's, you know, someone cutting letters out of a magazine.
Like a 90s magazine.
Right. The brothers' version of the story is that Jesse Smollett was like, no one is taking this threat. No one at Fox is taking this threat seriously. So I want you guys to beat me up. And the brothers were like, I don't know. I guess this is how Hollywood works. And that was their reasoning. And again, no one really talks about the logic of like, okay, if Jesse Smollett was beaten up by two MAGA racists, it is the dead of winter. Everyone's faces are covered up. So these two men were lying in wait for him. They had a noose ready. And the thing that I've never understood is these two guys who are racist, Trump-loving guys also watch the show Empire. I didn't know who Jesse Smollett was till this thing happened.
For sure. And that element of the story was always weird. Unless he was stalked, which would be consistent with the other witness that saw the guy with the rope outside of his building. I didn't come away from this documentary thinking that Jesse Smollett was totally innocent, but there are some contradictory elements of this case.
And I was unaware that he appealed his case to the Chicago Supreme Court, and his conviction was overturned late last year.
Yeah. So, there was no proof, so.
Yeah, I will say, like, for him to get convicted of that, based on, you are right, no DNA evidence and completely circumstantial evidence, that was ridiculous. But I still have some questions.
All right, next call.
Hey, guys. Long-time listener, second-time caller, because I did call you guys one time when I was really high. I just wanted to let you guys know that about a week ago, I created the Wikipedia page for every outfit because I thought it was crazy that you guys didn't already have one. And I did you guys the liberty of setting up redirects from both of your individual names to the every outfit page. But the real reason I'm calling is because there's something weird going on
I think this is very much against the ethos of Wikipedia, but I'm kind of obsessed with checking the page views. And the Every Outfit on Sex and the City page has gotten 96 views, which I'm so sorry if that is hurtful, since I created it on August 20th. But for some reason, the Chelsea Fairless redirect through the Every Outfit page has 500 views. And please don't take it personally, but for some reason, Lauren Garoni only has 3 clicks. So I don't really know what's going on. I don't know if there's some pay. I'm trying. I'm on the case, guys. But something weird is up. Love you. Keep it up.
Congratulations, Chelsea.
Okay, I don't understand Wikipedia, though. Like, redirected from what? Does this mean that people are searching my name on Wikipedia and then they're just being redirected to this new Every Outfit Wikipedia page?
It must be. I mean, when you Google each of our names, which not that I do that very often, it's not like our Wikipedia page even comes up. So I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it's clear who the favorite of this podcast duo is.
Oh, come on. There's got to be some explanation for this.
So next question, when are you guys going to film the episodes? We want to see your beautiful faces.
We're working on it. We're still putting the studio together. We have lots of things to do, but we've figured out all the crap that we need to buy, all the tech stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's a work in progress. It's coming together quite slowly. I think we have a very integral part of the studio, which is a fabulous furniture set, but all the technical stuff needs to happen. Also, I feel like, I don't know if you saw that Marc Maron is stopping his podcast, but he's been on this tour where he's been talking about the podcast coming to an end. And he said something very interesting about podcasting as an audio medium versus what podcasting has become with the integration of video into podcasting. I do think that the first things we're going to do with video are the things that just are our limitations with audio, specifically Fashion Police. I think we've reached our limit of like describing things that happen on the red carpet where it would just be much easier to film that.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I have to figure out whatever the fuck is going on with my face, because I've told you about this before. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the podcast. I've had this horrible thing that has been happening to me for the past like 4 months, which is that I randomly get these sores on each corner of my mouth. It's not herpes. It's a disease with the funniest name for me, which is chelitis.
Chell has chelitis?
It can be caused by all sorts of shit, too much sun exposure, which obviously couldn't be me. I thought it was iron deficiency for a while. Now I'm giving myself B12 injections. I don't know.
So basically when Chelsea is well enough to be on camera is when we will start filming things.
Yeah, exactly.
Favorite influencers. I had to really think about this because I'm someone who got their start in social media in influencer marketing, but I feel like I have not touched down in that world in a really long time.
Yeah, I don't follow many fashion influencers. You know, I like the interiors influencers more, although I don't know what any of their names are. Like, there's this gay man that keeps popping up in my algorithm that is like turning some home in the Hollywood Hills into some sort of like Italian villa, essentially. And I fuck with him.
Oh, it's funny that you say that because I can't remember his name either. But he is doing that home with a design build company called Ohm Design or Omidezin, Omedezin, which, by the way, I went to an open house and I literally asked the real estate agents, I go, is it Ohm Design or Omidezin? And they just went, we don't know either. But that's what I was going to say is as I've gotten older, I've become less interested in fashion influencers and more interested in food or interior design influencers.
Yeah, same. I'm with you. Although I did briefly enter the world of influencers last week. I didn't tell you about this. My wife, Tat, is a big fan of the Canceled podcast, co-hosted by, what's her name, Tana Mojo, who did a collaboration with Tarte Cosmetics. And so they had a launch party in West Hollywood. And we went, and it was like being inside another world.
Was Brooke Schofield there?
Brooke was there. I saw Brooke. I talked to Tana. She was very nice. And Tat introduced me to Trisha Paytas. Does she count as an influencer?
That's the thing. Influencer or online personality? Because I am also obsessed with Trisha Paytas.
I think Trisha Paytas is the Lucille Ball of our time. I think she has the most just natural, God-given comedic talent.
Well, going back to the question about Every Outfit TV, like my dream is to do a panel Fashion Police style show and have Trisha Paytas on with us discussing celebrity fashion.
No one would be funnier. But that was also crazy because there were so many OnlyFans girls there. Like, I didn't recognize any of them, obviously. Tat was like pointing them out. But it's crazy how much money some of these girls make, like millions a month.
Oh, God, yeah. I believe Tana is one of them. So I was thinking about this question and, you know, there are people like a Nara Smith or a Elsa Hosk where it's like, I'm not following them to get style inspiration, but like I do look at their social media presences and I'm like, that's a good curated life. And with Nara Smith, like I do love the bit.
Oh, for sure. Nara Smith is an innovator in the medium, for sure.
And then, I don't know, does Molly Boz count? Molly Boz is someone who was a recipe developer at Bon Appetit, left Bon Appetit, went out on her own, and she films videos. And just anyone that has an online presence or a following but has a legitimate skill set. Like, she's a recipe developer and she just launched this amazing line of mayonnaise called Ayo that is very, very good.
She's not influencer first. You know, she's like influencer third, I would say.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people that are like that.
Yeah. I mean, the only like true influencer when I was like looking back at my likes on TikTok, there's a girl named Andrea Ritchie who's just like very stylish, doesn't have a typical style of like the quote unquote influencer. Like her style is very just all black and white fashion.
Right.
But I think she's incredibly chic. So yeah. What else?
Lauren, are you dressing Morty in designer? That was a question from Instagram, not from me.
Well, because you would know the answer to this, which is if by designer you mean Gerber, then yes, the baby is wearing designer. But no, the baby is not wearing designer clothing, mostly because the baby exclusively like shit, pisses and spadoodles all over himself. Like before you got here, Chelsea, the baby went through three outfits.
Jesus.
From the time he woke up to when you arrived at 1 p.m., three outfits. He's not ready to put on designer just yet.
Okay, another question from Instagram. How has Lauren transitioned so seamlessly into mom? I felt like I lost myself for a year or so.
Well, thank you for thinking that. I'm definitely lost, but I can hold that in for like an hour or so when we do this podcast.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Now I know. Yeah.
I'm often asked, and it makes you chuckle, but like when we run into people or have dinner with people, they're like, don't you love motherhood or like being a mom? And I always stutter and it always makes you laugh because my answer is like, And I've been trying to think of an apt metaphor because it's not that I don't enjoy motherhood. It's just more like where I am right now in this journey. It would be like asking me if I like swimming when I'm currently stuck in a rip current.
Right.
It's like kind of different things. But the mom part is instinctual, or at the very least, it's the most immediate. You know, there's a tiny human being that needs to be kept alive. And as a society, they frown on you and sometimes jail you if you do not take care of your baby. But it's all the other things in my life I'm having trouble integrating into this motherhood thing. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, but this is like the hour or two where I don't have to be a mom. So maybe that's why it seems like I'm doing so well.
Okay, next question. What are each of your death row meals?
I'm so curious to know what yours is. And I wonder if
I would think you would be able to guess.
That's what I was going to say. I wonder if it's more interesting if we tried to guess each other's.
See, I don't think I could guess yours, but I think you could guess mine.
I mean, a Thanksgiving dinner?
Yes.
Or a Thanksgiving, well, one of two things. A Thanksgiving dinner or a Thanksgiving dinner in sandwich form.
I think one thing I need to know is like, where's this Thanksgiving dinner coming from? Because I'd rather get like Domino's or something than a bad prison Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay.
It needs to be like proper Thanksgiving. Although I think if I like knew it was my last meal and that I was about to die, I would probably like be anxious and not interested in food. So it's like, could I just get like a few rounds of bellinis or something?
I'm also, I mean, not to be gross, but I'm pretty sure that you probably crap yourself when the lethal injection or goes in. So, but I guess that's someone else's problem. For me, I join you in the bellinis. I would love caviar with bellinis. I'd be one of those serial killer death row sickos where it's like, no, we're doing a multi-part last meal.
Oh, you're talking about bellinis like with caviar. I'm talking about like the peach puree and champagne.
Yeah. Okay.
Although actually that would be a great last meal together.
Yeah. If I had to craft your final meal, little gem salad, peach bellini, ideally from Harry's Bar, caviar and bellinis, and then, yes, a proper Thanksgiving dinner or a Thanksgiving dinner as a sandwich.
Or do I just want, like, a really big order of Crab Rangoon?
Fuck, I forgot about Crab Rangoon. That is your other favorite. So, yeah, for me, the other kind of bellini, caviar with bellinis, all the fixins, uni sushi.
Okay, you're getting, like, too many things. You get one meal.
No, haven't you seen these documentations of last meals on death row? Some people do multi-part. There are no limitations from what I understand. But on the other end of the spectrum, mac and cheese and chicken tenders.
Yeah, that sounds good. Classic comfort food.
You know, before I shit myself when the lethal injection goes in. We have a call.
Hi, I have a kind of dad question for you all. How much does a cheeseburger cost in LA where you go out to eat? I live in Chicago, and basically every place now has a $20 cheeseburger, which reminds me of Samantha's very politically incorrect commentary on the meatpacking district from whatever season. I always chuckle, but it's kind of crazy to think about inflation. I was just curious, how much does it cost to eat out in LA? Thanks.
I mean, of course there are expensive hamburgers in Los Angeles. I was trying to find what the most expensive hamburger in LA is.
Well, the one at the Sunset Tower is $45.
Yes. But at least there you get fries.
But the one at the Chateau Marmont, much more reasonable, $23.
Oh, damn.
Not bad. But hamburgers generally are expensive. Like, they're like a Shake Shack burger is upwards of $10 now.
Yeah. There's a caviar place in LA called Petrosian, and they have an off-the-menu caviar burger that is $75. But it has caviar on it, which, by the way,
that's a disgusting thing to order.
It sounds disgusting.
Who wants that?
However, you can go to In-N-Out and get a cheeseburger for $4. When I was in high school, it was only $1.70. But I feel like inflation-wise, considering other fast food hamburger prices, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
The thing that takes my breath away more than the cost of a hamburger in Los Angeles is how much sandwiches cost in L.A. There is a place called Uncle Polly's. There's a few sandwich places that model themselves after like a millennial idea of what an East Coast deli is like.
Yeah, like Giada, specifically an Italian deli.
Yes, Giada and Uncle Polly's. And Uncle Polly's Italian cold cut sandwich is $18.
Well, to be fair, I think we have a warped sense of like how much things should cost. Like anything involving meat shouldn't be 99 cents.
Right.
But I do agree. The prices of sandwiches are just not proportionate to the minimum wage.
The minimum wage and also the amount of effort it would take to just recreate that sandwich yourself.
Okay, but that's not even cheaper. Like, have you gone to a grocery store lately? Like, all the things you would need for an Uncle Polly's sandwich, that could set you back like $50, $60.
Sure, but then you can make multiple sandwiches.
Yeah, if you're eating exclusively sandwiches for a week, which no one does. Unless, of course, you have a big family. Like, for me, it's like it barely even makes sense.
I'm just saying, when you look at Goop Kitchen and you can get, like, the salmon bento box for the same price that you could get an Italian cold cut sandwich, it's a little crazy.
True.
If you were going to file for bankruptcy, what would you max out your credit cards on before filing? I take this question to mean, what are our bucket list items that you want to own if money was no object?
Are we personally bankrupt or is it the company?
Oh.
See, I don't think I would. If I was about to file for bankruptcy, I actually don't think I would do this.
But if our company was filing for bankruptcy?
No. I wouldn't either way.
So I take this to mean, like, what are our, if money was no object, items would we purchase?
I guess I'd get a Chanel 255.
Interesting.
It's a bag I've always really liked, but there's no world in which I would buy it.
Yeah, for me, it would be a suede Kelly bag. They are incredibly rare, incredibly expensive, and I mess up my purses. That would instantaneously have an oil stain on it, probably from an Uncle Polly's Italian cold cut sandwich.
Actually, I take it back. Fuck Chanel. I want that Comme des Garçons Louis Vuitton bag with the holes in it, which I can now buy on first dibs for, let me see, $8,000.
I mean, I feel like that's a reachable goal.
Filing for bankruptcy so I can finally get my LV tote. Yeah, great idea. Are you seeing Oasis?
I guess the question would be, did we go see Oasis over the weekend?
No, we did not.
No, absolutely not. First of all of my friends who went and saw Oasis at the Rose Bowl bought their tickets a year ago. And I remember when my friends bought these tickets, I was like, they're never going to perform. They're going to break up before this concert ever happens. And something tells me their business manager must have shown them a number of like, you know, you guys, if you back out of this, this is how much you're going to owe. And they were like, got it, got it.
Yeah, I'm happy for their fans that they have fulfilled their obligation of this tour thus far. And no shade to Oasis. They've always been a great band. I did see them at Coachella years ago. So I wouldn't care enough.
Yeah, I don't need 70,000 people singing Wonderwall all at the same time.
Although I am truly shocked just from Instagram learning how many people I know flew to England, which that would be a much better environment to see Oasis, certainly.
Do you mean Claire?
Not just Claire. Hey, Claire. Other people as well.
I did text a few people who went and saw Oasis. They said it was incredible, one of the best concerts they've ever seen, so good for them. The insane money that I will be spending on a concert is in a couple of weeks for the Nine Inch Nails show at the Kia Forum.
All right. Lastly, we have a few Sex in the City / and Just Like That questions.
Oh, Chell, I think I hear the baby crying. I think I gotta go. I can't answer these And Just Like That questions.
First of all, what do you think about Taffy Brodesser Ackner's comments about how people who hate And Just Like That actually hate middle-aged women?
So this is from Wesley Morris's new podcast called Cannonball, which I've listened to a bunch of episodes, but just, I don't know, never listened to this one until recently. And I have some thoughts, Chelsea.
And now what I'll say to you is, if you hate this show, do you actually just hate middle-aged women? You wouldn't be the first. That is the crazy thing I will say on this podcast, that maybe I'll call you up and say, just take it out later, because I don't need the trouble.
No, but I feel the same way.
We should say that Wesley Morris and Taffy are looking at this show through middle-aged Gen X rose-colored glasses. And at several points, she refers to And Just Like That as a documentary without an ounce of irony.
Okay. We don't know what her life is like, but no shade to Taffy. Love her. Love her writing. Love Wesley Morris. Also loved this episode because they're not just talking about And Just Like That. They're talking about Sex in the City and the legacy of the show and how it personally impacted both of them. But I don't agree with this particular take of Taffy's, just because I know that I do not hate middle-aged women.
And also, we did, during our breakdowns of these episodes, give space of like, look, we're not the age of these characters, so maybe we're not seeing something. And many fuckheads called in were like, I am the age of these characters. None of this makes sense to me either. And when you listen to this podcast episode, it was very similar to listening to the Writer's Room podcast, because the show that Wesley Morris and Taffy are describing is not exactly the show that I feel like you and I were watching.
Yes. And I see the point that she's making. There are, of course, you know, very specific burdens that come with being middle-aged. That's undeniable. But there also are women who are having a great time, certainly.
And again, the show did not have to have the same frivolity as the original show, but the tone that the show settled into, which we have described ad nauseum, was perplexing. Something I find equally perplexing is, for two writers, the fact that they gloss over the glaring just structural mistakes of this show as two writers, I find kind of astounding. Because what they're really focusing on in this episode, which is a true part of And Just Like That, is the breakdown of Carrie and Miranda's friendship.
Right. And they're also talking about the exit of Samantha. And they're making sound points about the fact that as you age, if you have old friends, like, not everyone sticks around. Friendship dynamics change. Some people flee the group. It does happen. And I do think that And Just Like That is accurate in that respect. But it's the way it was done on And Just Like That that I think felt incorrect to us.
They also don't touch down at all, because Taffy keeps insisting, she's like, these are conversations that are happening on the Upper East Side, but they don't touch down into the more ridiculous elements of And Just Like That, like the fact that almost a season and a half was spent on Aiden and his crazy family.
Right.
So, I mean, they're definitely focusing in on one particular part of the show and really not taking the show as a whole. But they're entitled to their opinion.
For sure. And I thought it was interesting what Taffy was saying in the beginning of the episode, where she was talking about how she watched the show in her 20s when she was searching for her own identity, and how the girls in Sex and the City, that was an identity, and that was something that shaped her own identity and perception of herself. And I think that that's so true. Like, we watch this show at such an impressionable age. I do feel like it's a part of me. I do feel like it. These women were not just characters, but role models in a lot of ways and for a lot of people. So yeah, I appreciate the fact that both of them are clearly such huge fans of the show as we are.
And that is an interesting thing they get into, which is the kind of zodiac signification of these women that, you know, we also lead with, which is like, oh, I'm a Miranda with a Carrie rising. That to see these characters be presented in a way that is messy or messier than we saw these women in Sex and the City, Miranda in particular, that is what we also found so detestable. Of what does that say about me if this is the way Miranda is now? Which is fair.
Yeah.
They don't touch on Charlotte at all in this episode, though.
Well, I think that Charlotte was referenced when they talk about, like, people on the Upper East Side are having conversations like this. They were talking about Charlotte and LTW.
Oh, I definitely feel that there is a high school age mom group all sharing their Adderall connects.
For sure. Okay. Another question. Do you think that Darren Star leaving after season 3 hurt the show? I mean, no, because season 4 is excellent.
And even the ending of Sex and the City, where Carrie does end up with Big, which was Michael Patrick King's vision of the show, that did feel very earned and satisfying. I do feel like this question might be coming from the thought that if Darren Star had stayed on through the course of Sex and the City, that somehow, if invariably there was a sequel series like an And Just Like That, that show would be better. And I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, because he's making Emily in Paris now. And I say that as a fan of Emily in Paris. But tonally, it's not dissimilar from what Michael Patrick King sort of evolved the show into. All right, last call.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. This is David from West Hollywood. I'm a big fan. I've enjoyed listening to you guys and seeing you live. So sometimes I like to smoke a little and I watch Sex and the City. And while I'm high, I notice and fixate on some random things. Like in season 6, episode 10, at the 6:40 mark, the girls are in the cafe and Samantha has a fruit plate in front of her and she just stabs and stabs and stabs fruit until it doesn't even fit on the fork anymore. I know Chelsea would agree with me that it's psychotic and unhinged. So my question is for you, do you have any favorite random moments or bloopers from the series that the average viewer would have missed? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I have a few. I think for me, there's a gaffe in season 2, episode 13, the games people play. That's the Jon Bon Jovi episode where Carrie goes to therapy. Carrie is writing on her laptop facing the window. So you see her television behind her. And in the reflection of the TV, you can see the complete lighting setup and the crew in the television.
I feel like there's also a scene in the Sex and the City movie like that.
It's very tough, probably in the reflection of her sunglasses, because that's always something in movies and TV when characters wear sunglasses, you often see the camera crew or certainly the lights being reflected.
See, my favorite moments in Market to Market, the girls are having brunch and there is a continuity issue with this Marilyn Monroe Warhol coin purse that is on the table where it just moves around.
Interesting.
Also, I believe these are also present in Market to Market in several other episodes. Those menus with the rose petals.
Yes.
The menus with the rose petals were used at different restaurants.
Right.
Throughout the run of Sex and the City. Like, it's not like they were at the diner or something and we just see them week after week. They just pop up randomly. But yes, I know the fruit stabbing Kim Cattrall scene that you speak of. That must have been a bad day on set for her.
I have always fixated on the fact that in the episode in season 4 of Sex and the Country, when Carrie is making apple pie, she takes out a pie crust that she has baked and she says to Aiden, "Now we just have to put apples in it and it's pie." To which I say, that is not a pie. It's not a pie yet. You need to put some cinnamon sugar. You need to put it back in the oven. It's just a baked pie crust and some raw apples in it.
Okay, wait. I just thought of a couple other gross moments. I'm sure we've talked about this because I believe we talked about this episode. But just the fact that when Charlotte has her whole, like, there's the whole intervention about the rabbit vibrator. The fact that Miranda just, like, takes it from her and puts a used vibrator in her handbag, I will never get over. Also, on And Just Like That, I don't know if you remember, but in season 1, there was, like, scenes where Charlotte was watching Richard Burton, but she was, like, cradling the shit in her hands, like the bag of shit. You know how you usually hold it from the...
the top.
The
yeah.
top, but, like... she was just holding his warm shit.
Ugh.
I love these moments, though. It's the little things.
Anything else for us to answer?
I think that's it. We've done it all. Thank you guys for listening.
And we'll be back next week. But before we go, Chelsea, I just want to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, honey. I'm even fucking older. Great.
You're 1 year older, but you'll also be so much tanner because you guys are going to Miami.
Yeah, I'm excited. The tan won't be real, but yes, I will have one when I come back.
Well, until then, bye.
Bye, guys.